Have you ever done one of those questionnaires in a magazine where it tells you something about your personality? Have you ever done these sort of ones? You know, mostly A's, it will tell you this thing, and mostly B's, it will tell you this thing. Now's your chance to do one of these questionnaires, okay? So, you're going to have to answer honestly. Question one. There is a family party. Your partner has gone upstairs to dress the baby. Do you, A, let them get on with it, or B, lay out all the clothes, including the socks and tights, to ensure that their outfit is properly coordinated? I don't think you're the only one. Question two. Your partner asks you to start the dishwasher. Do you A, put the tablet in and start the machine straight away, or B, check how it's been loaded, rearrange a few things, and then start the machine? There's a lot of bees coming. You don't need loading with a tablet. You've asked a colleague to do a job for you for question three. Do you A, let them get on with it, or B, phone them every few minutes for a progress report, check how they're doing, and then finally pop in to see them and maybe suggest a few changes? Oh, I'll split you on this one. Okay. So hands up if you're mostly A's then. Oh, there's a few A's. Okay, so this would suggest that you are very laid back. That's what we like to see. Okay. Hands up if you are mostly B's. I hate to say it, but you're a bit of a control freak. Now, this isn't actually a real psychometric test. It isn't actually giving you real information. But there are all things that we find easier to let go of and some things that we find much harder and we like to keep control of, aren't there, in our lives? So we're going to have a look at our reading today, and it's from 2 Kings chapter 5. And as we read it, I want you to particularly notice the levels of control that the different characters in this story have, okay? So it's 2 Kings and it's chapter 5 and it's the healing of Naaman. The king of Aram had great admiration for Naaman, the commander of his army, because through him the Lord had given Aram great victories. But though Naaman was a mighty warrior, he suffered from leprosy. At this time, Aramean raiders had invaded the land of Israel, and among their captives was a young girl who had been given to Naaman's wife as a maid. One day, the girl said to her mistress, "I wish my master would go to see the prophet in Samaria. He would heal him of his leprosy." So Naaman told the king what the young girl from Israel had said. "Go and visit the prophet," the king of Aram told him. "I will send a letter of introduction for you to take to the king of Israel." So Naaman started out, carrying as gifts 750 pounds of silver, 150 pounds of gold, and 10 sets of clothing. The letter to the king of Israel said, With this letter, I present my servant Naaman. I want you to heal him of his leprosy." When the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his clothes in dismay and said, "Am I God that I can give life and take it away? Why is this man asking me to heal someone with leprosy? I can see that he's just trying to pick a fight with me." But when Elisha, the son of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes in dismay, he sent this message to him: "Why are you so upset? Send Naaman to me, and he will learn that there is a true prophet here in Israel." So Naaman went with his horses and chariots and waited at the door of Elisha's house. But Elisha sent a messenger out to him with this message: "Go and wash yourself 7 times in the Jordan River. Then your skin will be restored and you will be healed of your leprosy." But Naaman became angry and stalked away. "I thought he would certainly come out to meet me," he said. "I expected him to wave his hand over the leprosy and call on the name of the Lord his God and heal me. Aren't the rivers of Damascus, the Abana and the Pharpar, better than any of the rivers of Israel? Why shouldn't I wash in them and be healed?" So Naaman turned and went away in a rage. But his officers tried to reason with him and said, "Sir, if the prophet had told you to do something very difficult, wouldn't you have done it? So you should surely certainly obey him when he says simply, 'Go and wash and be cured.'" So Naaman went down to the Jordan River and dipped himself 7 times as the man of God had instructed him. And his skin became as healthy as the skin of a young child, and he was healed. Then Naaman and his entire party went back to find the man of God. They stood before him, and Naaman said, "Now I know that there is no God in all the world except in Israel. So please accept a gift from your servant." But Elisha replied, "As surely as the Lord lives, whom I serve, I will not accept any gifts." And though Naaman urged him to take the gift, Elisha refused. Then Naaman said, "All right, but please allow me to load 2 of my mules with earth from this place, and I will take it back home with me. From now on, I will never again offer burnt offerings or sacrifices to any other god except the Lord. However, may the Lord pardon me in this one thing. When my master, the king, goes into the temple of the god Rimmon to worship there and leans on my arm, may the Lord pardon me when I bow too." "Go in peace," Elisha said. So Naaman started home again. Well, the story doesn't stop there, but your homework is to finish that and read it at home to find out what happens next. Now, the characters in this story have very different levels of control. On the one hand, we've got this young servant girl who's been snatched away from her home country and forced to work in a foreign land. And on the other hand, we've got Naaman, who is this commander of mighty armies, hugely respected by the king, and he's used to having complete control over his life. Now, we don't know much about the young girl. Historians think that she wasn't quite teen. She was maybe sort of 8 to 10 years old, or 10 to 12 years old. And in those days, children just didn't have any rights. And particularly girls, they had no rights at all. And of course, she was living as a foreigner in a foreign land, and foreigners had no rights. And to top it all, she was a slave. So she had nothing. She had no control over her life at all. And she was completely powerless. Now, I wonder how you would have felt in a situation like this, completely powerless, whether you would have felt completely overwhelmed by the situation, whether you would have been angry at God and the things that you were now forced to do. But somehow, this young girl managed to look outside of her own problems and she noticed the problem of her captor. In fact, she didn't just notice it, she wanted to do something about it. And she lived out 1 Corinthians 13 version of what love is in the way that she treated him. Now, she obviously had great faith because she knew not only that her God could heal, she believed that he was going to heal. And he was going to heal a foreigner who worshipped foreign gods. Now, many of us believe that God can heal, but sometimes we doubt if he will. And therefore, we don't ask other people to go to God and ask for healing. We just don't feel that we can recommend it to them. Now, she had no power in her situation, yet she dared to suggest that her mighty warrior, master, should go back to her own home country that she wasn't allowed to return to and be healed himself. So what can we learn from her? Firstly, no matter how powerless you may appear in a situation, God is still powerful. If God puts something on your heart, no matter how improbable, then listen to him. When God causes us to notice something, he often wants us to be part of the solution. Now, around 8 years ago, I was bothered by Leyndon Shopping Centre. I grew up in Leyndon, and I'd seen it gradually deteriorate over the years. And one end of the shopping centre had been knocked down, and then they just walked away and left it in rubble. And the centre of the shopping centre used to flood all the time. The shops faced in on each other, and the central bit used to flood, so people used to have to sort of paddle through the water to get in and out of the shops. And I'd walk past it regularly and think, this just isn't right, and it really bothered me, not just because the shopping centre wasn't any good, but because it just demonstrated a lack of love and care for the people, and that really bothered me. And so God spoke to me and he told me that I needed to write a letter to the owners of the shopping centre and approach them to see if there was anything I could do to help. So I contacted other local churches and I wrote this letter, and I didn't know who the owners were or how I was going to get it to them, but somebody said they knew a security guard, and the security guard knew somebody, and they knew somebody, and this letter found its way to the owners of the shopping centre, and they turned out to be Christians who were going through financial difficulties and were really grateful, and we met and they talked with us and we talked about the things we could do, and they gave me permission to go in there and make some changes. So a few of us all got together from all the churches in Leyndon, and we donned these T-shirts so people knew what we were up to and who we were working for, that being God. And we did simple things. We weeded the paving slabs, we cleared the drains, we painted railings, we built some flower troughs, and God just kept working miracles. We asked a local company if they had any wood so we could build these flower troughs. And three lorry loads of wood turned up. So that was a bit excessive. But God just kept on working these little miracles. But more important than the fact that the shopping centre started to look a little bit better was the fact that people would stop and talk to us because we had these T-shirts on. And they would ask questions. And we would say that we were from the local churches. And they were quite surprised that different denominations of churches were working together. They didn't think that we were allowed to talk to one another. So that made quite a difference to them. And they opened up conversations about God. And one guy was painting the railings one day, and a chap came up to him who'd taken an overdose. And he came up to him and said, "I've changed my mind. Can you help me?" And the guy painting the railings ended up calling an ambulance and being with him so that he could be kept safe. So God used that little sense of being bothered by a shopping centre to touch different people's lives, and just in small ways. But God chooses to work through us. So if God stirs your heart, no matter the size of the problem, he can still work in the situation because he is all powerful. This young girl in the story had no power at all, but she dared to speak up and suggest that things could be different for Naaman. And God used her to demonstrate that power. Secondly, have faith. Often our reaction is to look logically at the size of the problem or the complexity or the difficulty and just think, there is nothing we can do, it's too difficult. But Augustine once said, without him we can't, without us he won't. And throughout the Bible we read of how God chooses to turn impossible situations around through his people. God wants to work with us and through us to make his kingdom come. And we have the huge privilege of being used by God, working alongside him to bring about his will. By ourselves, there is no way that we can solve the problem. But with God, anything is possible. So this young girl has faith, believing that healing is possible for this man who doesn't even love her God. Thirdly, changing perspective slightly, don't dismiss people because of their status or their background. It would have really been easy for Naaman or his wife or the king to shut down that young girl and tell her not to be ridiculous. And I've recently had experience where God was trying to talk to me with two of my children asking me the same question, and I dismissed them because they're children. But God kept on at me in lots of different ways. Luckily, he's very patient, and eventually he got the message through to me. And a while back, I worked with a victim of a really horrible crime. Quite often when I receive a referral, it takes a few weeks until I actually get to meet the person, but this one was urgent and I needed to see them straight away. And so you know it's going to be bad. And she had been the victim of a really awful crime, which had made her feel like she was just at the bottom of the heap in society. She was a heroin user, and she was used to being judged and people making assumptions about her. But she was a hugely intelligent young lady. She was really widely read. And she suggested that I read this book. And the book, the name of the author was a bit strange, so I wasn't even sure if that was really a name. And the title of the book was a bit odd, so again, I was a little bit unsure of it. But anyway, I did get hold of this book, and it was amazing. It was all about addiction and about how you can work with people with addiction. And then I really enjoyed that, and I found out he'd written a book on ADHD, and I read that as well. So because of her advice, it changed the way that I worked with people in the future because of these books that she'd recommended to me. So be aware that God can speak through anyone, whether they know him or not, whatever their social status. And we always need to be aware of our own snobberies and prejudices and be careful that they don't cause us to miss out on what God is saying to us. And finally, look out and not in. Quite often when we have problems, we feel overwhelmed and we tend to shrivel up, don't we, into the fetal position. And we're so overwhelmed that we just cannot see anything that's going on around us. And it takes real strength and courage to be able to look out and around us and see the bigger picture. But in God's strength, if we manage it, it really helps as we start to see how turning the focus away from our situation and onto other people's problems. And this young girl managed to see the needs of her slave master, and she was filled with compassion for him. And there was a ripple effect from this, because not only did he get healed, he came to know God for himself. And nearly 3,000 years later, we're still being touched by her actions as we learn more about our God. So there's four things to remember. With God, you are not powerless. Have faith. God can speak through anyone, whatever their social status or their situation. And look out and not in. Now, before we move on to Naaman, there's one other person that seems to be quite insignificant in this story, not even significant enough to have a name, and that is Naaman's wife. But there must have been something about her that meant that she was approachable to that little girl. She felt able to talk to Naaman's wife and to suggest that Naaman could be healed. And then his wife managed to pass that message on to her husband in a way that he would hear it and listen to it and act on it. And at this stage, Naaman's wife would not have known God, but yet God, she was made in his image, and there was character traits in her that God used for his purposes. So let's have a think then about the main character in this story, and that is Naaman. Now, he was important enough to have a name. He was the commanding officer of whole armies. He could pop in and see the king. He was well respected. He seemed to have a lot of control at first glance. But although he was wealthy and high-ranking, there was one thing that he had no control over at all, and that was his health. Now, we don't know exactly what his skin condition was. We don't think it was leprosy because he hadn't been sort of shunned from society, and the word used can refer to lots of other skin conditions that are incurable. So we do know that it was incurable, and we do know that it bothered the king enough that he was willing to send his top commander into enemy territory to see if he could be healed. So Naaman left Aram, which we now know as southern Syria, and he went into neighbouring Israel. Now, if you turn back a book into 1 Kings chapter 22, you will see that there are lots of wars going on between Israel and Syria. And in fact, if you read on to the next chapter in 2 Kings chapter 6, you'll see there's more wars. The two countries were not best friends. And so at this stage, there was an uneasy peace going on. And so it was a bit dodgy to go sending your top commander into this country. So the king tried to ease the way in by writing this letter of introduction. And he also sent a few presents. Anybody have a rough idea of how much they think the gifts would have been worth in today's money? What do you reckon? Go on then. Yeah, he's very good because he would say, first service, good memory, fantastic. So £1.3 million worth of presents. That's not a bad gift, is it? So now it was the King of Israel's turn to feel out of control. He was panicking because he thought that this obviously had to be a trick. There was no way that he could heal Naaman. And there was this warrior with his chariots and his horses. He was obviously coming to pick a fight, and so he panicked, and he tore his clothes in despair. But Elisha obviously would have got all A's in our questionnaire earlier. He was very laid back, and just sent a message to the king saying, just send him to me. It's fine. I'll sort it out. And so that's what he does. He's so laid back, in fact, that he doesn't even come and answer the door to Naaman when he knocks. And Naaman is a man who's been used to being treated very well. Now, in the last few days, there's been various people talking about their experiences of when they got to meet the queen and what it felt like and what happened. Now, imagine if one of your friends said that the queen had turned up at their house and she'd arrived in her posh car and she'd come up the front steps, knocked on the front door of their house with her own hands, not the butler, she did it herself, and knocked at the door. Imagine if your friend then said to them that they just called out a few instructions to the queen and said, yeah, you know, here's how to do it, off you trot. You'd be horrified. You'd be like, what are you doing? That's the queen, you don't do that. And the queen herself would have been a bit shocked. You know, she's come to this house, she hasn't asked for red carpets, but she's still chosen to come to this house, and yet you can't even be bothered to come downstairs and talk to her. I'm sure she would have been a little bit put out. And so Naaman is shocked by Elisha's very casual response. There he is with his horses and his chariots and his gifts, and he's left standing on the doorstep. And not only that, what made it worse was he'd imagined in his head what was going to happen next. He'd already decided that what was going to happen was Elisha would come down, he would say this amazing prayer in this dramatic way, he'd wave his hands over him, that would instantly heal him, everyone would see it. So he'd played it all out, he knew what was going to happen, but it didn't. And he was quite an important man. He felt that this was how he deserved to be treated. This is how it should have played out. Now, it's easy to laugh and to ridicule, but actually, how often do we come to God in the same way? We come to God with our problems, but we also have quite a few suggestions of what God could do to solve the situation. And so we come to him with the way that he should respond. When we're feeling out of control, our temptation is to hold on to the reins even tighter and to try and regain that control for ourselves in an attempt to make ourselves feel better. So Naaman thought he had this plan. He thought that it was one that was fitting for his status. But when his plan was scrapped, he became angry because he felt disrespected. And anger is quite often our go-to reaction, isn't it? Whenever we feel angry, it's worth trying to work out where that's coming from and what that emotion is actually all about. And the problem is, when emotions take over, when we feel that we are out of control and we're scared and we're anxious and we're angry, what it actually does is it fires up a particular part of our brain called the amygdala. And if you were to poke your finger in your eye and your ear and meet in the middle, you'd bump into your amygdala, okay? It's a little almond-shaped part of your brain. You've got one on either side of your brain. And that thing takes control. It's so tiny, but it takes control of the reasoning, logical part of your brain, the frontal cortex, which is quite big, but all of a sudden it can't work anymore. That's it. It can't see logic. Because when you think about it logically, Naaman's been told he's going to be healed. And that is exactly why he came there. So he's getting what he wanted. But instead of being relieved or grateful, he is angry and he's resentful. And he feels out of control because things aren't going the way that he'd planned. And he feels that he deserves better. Well, recently the whole world has been forced to face the fact that actually, no matter who we are, there are things that we have no control over. So we've gone through a pandemic and we've discovered that actually all of us can get ill and could get this infection that could kill us. We've had really hot weather through August, haven't we? And the ground has cracked and we've seen usual greenness in our country turn brown. And we've realised we have no control over the weather and we've gone into a drought. We've seen the news and we've seen war break out in Ukraine and we've watched it and we felt completely powerless as we've seen this happen so unexpectedly. And then, of course, we've noticed the impact on our finances as the cost of living has gone up. And we felt powerless. And even people who have been sort of quite financially secure have had to start looking at their money and start cutting back and thinking about how they're going to manage as they go forward. And then just this week, we've had a change in our Prime Minister and we've had a change in our monarch. Most of us have only known the Queen all of our lives. And all of a sudden, that's changed. So money, war, weather, health, bereavement, relationships, jobs, politics, leadership, ultimately, we have no control over any of them. And in recent times, it's highlighted that for us even more. And because of this, we've seen a rise in anxiety in this country. We've seen a rise in mental health crisis as people grapple with this realisation that actually they are not in control and that the world is an unpredictable place. And it's not an unusual response to say, why me? When life hits us with unexpected things, we can say to each other that we don't understand how such horrible things can happen to nice people. We can rant at God and we can ask how he has allowed such things to happen. And we can feel disrespected and we can feel that it's not right and we can feel let down. Now, Naaman was lucky because when his amygdala took over the logical part of his brain, so he couldn't think straight anymore because of his emotions, his officers took over the role of that part of his brain instead. And they managed to talk reason into him. And again, they were people that wouldn't have had very much control. And there would have been a certain amount of risk coming up to your army commanding officer and trying to reason with them when they're angry. I don't know if you've ever tried to reason with an angry boss. It doesn't always go well. But they simplified the problem and they helped Naaman to see that he could be healed by doing something really simple. So what can we learn from Naaman? Well, firstly, everything we have comes from God. Naaman probably felt that he had earned his status and his respect from the queen. But actually, if we read verse 1, it makes it quite clear that Naaman had only succeeded because God had allowed him to succeed. It's easy for us to jump to the conclusion that we are where we are in life because of what we've done, that we deserve these things to have happened to us, whether they're good things or whether they're bad. And if we're not careful, we start to give ourselves a bit of a godlike status where we think of ourselves as being higher than he is. And when that happens, we lose perspective of God's power. We need to remember that everything that we have comes from God. Secondly, we are not in control. We can do all sorts of things to try and mitigate risk and to encourage good health and healthy relationships and good financial situations, but ultimately it's outside our control. Sometimes we just need to stop struggling. And the lifeboat service have been issuing suggestions over the summer, haven't they, about what to do if you find yourself in deep water. Our temptation is to thrash about and to panic when we think that we're drowning. But what the lifeboat service tells us is actually we should just lay back in a star shape. And then when we start to do that, we can regain our breath, we can catch hold of ourselves again, and we can start to see that actually we're okay. We can float for a while. And this is what 1 Peter 5, verses 6 to 7 says. It says, "So humble yourselves under the mighty power of God, and at the right time, he will lift you up in honour. Give all your worries and cares to God, for he cares about you." I was listening to the radio the other day, and a lady came on who, in her 30s, she became very ill. And when she woke up from her coma, she thought she was 17 years old, and she got quite shocked when she looked in the mirror and realised that she was not 17. And then she was even more shocked to find out she was married and had three children. And it took her ages to get her head around this. And she did all sorts of things trying to trigger those memories and get some of that those memories back again. And she just couldn't. There was nothing she could do. And eventually she started drinking because she was struggling to cope with this loss. But eventually, God spoke to her, and she came to a point where she realised that God's plan for her without her memories was better than her plan with her memories. She stopped trying to struggle and recall her past, and she chose to trust God with her future. She learnt to do as Psalm 46, verse 10 says, "Be still and know that I am God." When we stop struggling and striving for ourselves, and hand the problem over to God, it's so much easier. Thirdly, we are not in control, but God is, which is really comforting to know, particularly as our children grow up and the control we have over them diminishes. But Naaman was at a disadvantage because he was coming to a foreign God who he knew nothing about. We have the privilege of knowing God. We read of his faithfulness in the Bible. We see his unchanging character. We hear of how he has worked in the lives of other people in our church. And we can look back on our own lives and we can see how, with the beauty of hindsight, God was working in those situations. So we need to make the time to get to know our God. We need to read about him and spend time with him and note down and celebrate when we've seen him at work in our lives. And the more we get to know him, the more we realise that we can trust him. Now, years ago, I used to work in the probation service, and I used to run groups for violent offenders and also run group for some general offenders. And there were times when those groups got a little bit feisty. You never quite knew what was going to happen in some of them. But what always made it easier was if I was working with a colleague who I knew well. If I knew them well, I knew how they were going to react. They knew how I was going to react. We could work together in the situation and we knew we'd come out the other side of it, even if we were in for a bit of a bumpy ride, because we could trust each other. And it's the same with God. We can go through difficult situations, but if we know who God is and what he's like, it makes that bumpy ride a little bit safer for us. Now, Corrie Ten Boom is a Holocaust survivor who knows what it's like to completely be out of control of her situation. And she said, "Never be afraid to trust an unknown future to a known God." So get to know your God based on what the Bible says, not on what you think it says or what he'd probably do. And then you'll get to know that he is in control and you will feel more comfortable with that. And finally, tell God about your problems. He has created your emotions. He knows what you're thinking anyway. You can't hide it from him. So tell him what you're thinking, tell him how you're feeling. Sometimes it's useful to actually write it down so that you can lay it down before him and sort of symbolically put it down and pray over it. And if you read the Psalms, you'll see there is huge amounts of honesty there as people grapple with their feelings about their situations. And if you read Job, you'll see that he really questioned God and struggled with what he was going through and wanted God to give him answers. And God can take it when we come to him with those questions. And as you tell him your problems, leave it to him to come up with the solution. Instead of being like Naaman, who came with a plan in his head of what he thought was going to happen, be more like King Hezekiah, who in 2 Kings chapter 19 received a letter. And in the letter, it was threatening war. And he did not know what to do about that situation. He knew it was too difficult for him to cope with. So he went to the temple and he spread this letter out before God. And the first thing he did was he worshipped God and recognized him as the creator of the universe. And after he'd worshipped him, then he told God what the problem was. And then he left it with God to come up with a solution. And God worked in that situation in a miraculous way, in a way that King Hezekiah could never have imagined or come up with by himself. You'll have to read 2 Kings 19 to find out what happened. But God is amazing, isn't he, if we dare to present him with our problems and leave him to come up with a solution. Isaiah 55, verses 8 to 9 reminds us, "My thoughts are nothing like your thoughts, says the Lord, and my ways are far beyond anything you could imagine. For just as the heavens are higher than the earth, so my ways are higher than your ways, and my thoughts higher than your thoughts." So as the worship team come up, we see that everything we have comes from God. We are not in control and should hand over our struggle for control to God. The more we get to know God, the more we will be able to trust him. And we should tell God our troubles and how we feel about them, leaving him to come up with a solution. So no matter what you're going through this morning, God has a plan for you. He has not forgotten you. Jeremiah 29, verse 11 reminds us of this. It says, "For I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord. They are plans for good and not for disaster, to give you a future and a hope." And if we let go and let God take control, Philippians 4, verses 6 to 7 promises that we will feel better. It says, "Don't worry about anything. Instead, pray about everything. Tell God what you need and thank him for all he has done. Then you will experience God's peace, which exceeds anything we can understand. His peace will guard your hearts and minds as you live in Christ Jesus." Let's just pray.